to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. The National Institute for Nanotechnology is searching the globe for a director general. The man currently sitting in charge of NINT calls it a dream job. And the push is on to take the forest out of forestry. At least that's what participants at a recent thesis workshop heard. ALPAC's Bill Hunter and Aries Neil Oberg look ahead to a day when farmers and foresters work together. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Check the recent job postings at the National Research Council, and you'll find one for a director general to head up the new NRC National Institute for Nanotechnology. The new institute in Edmonton is housed at the University of Alberta. And when Dan Wehner was here as acting director general, he helped set the direction for the fledgling research institute and oversaw the sod turning ceremonies of the new building for NINT. Now, Dr. Janusz Lusztyk is here looking after business until a permanent director general can be located. I asked him what qualities the headhunters are looking for.
We are looking for a very special person, a person with many talents, ranging from being possibly an active scientist or a researcher with a good research past, a good manager, good people's person, somebody who will build this new institute here in Edmonton to the heights that we hope we can achieve, the institution that will be well recognized within Canada and internationally as a hub of activity in nanoscience and nanotechnology.
It sounds like there'd be a terrible amount of responsibility in this job.
Certainly, yes, but I think you will have also tremendous rewards for it. I think it's a very unique opportunity for anybody who loves science, who loves research, who loves working with people, and who loves to create something. It's a very rare opportunity that you can come to the place, have relatively secured funding, and have opportunity to build new institution, put your stamp, your vision into reality. So I think certainly there will be difficult times, there will be difficult decisions to make, there will be challenges of working with different stakeholders, but I think rewards are such that I'm quite confident that we will find very, very strong candidates, and whoever will eventually become DG of National Institute for Nanotechnology will never regret of doing so. I think the rewards will be tremendous.
Are you looking for people who are Canadian or from anywhere around the world?
Our search is entirely open. We have a consulting headhunter company helping out, and we are, with their help, looking at every corner of the globe to find this special person that we are looking for. So it is international. We are looking for candidates that we want to review, that we want to look at anywhere in the world.
You've been here in Edmonton for a few months as the acting director general, and you've also been a director general of another institute. What have you found while you've been here in Edmonton? What are the qualities that you would try and sell for someone to come here and be the director general?
Well, I think there are a number of things that I found both fascinating and very encouraging and pleasant here. I think from a professional point of view, I think it's a very lively community, lively academic community. You have a wonderful university here with great facilities, great scientists. You have a very active and capable administrative system of the province with whom we do interact. I think I also found tremendous spirit of the city. I think I always knew that Alberta is special. And I'm finding now that that's true. People are very enthusiastic, friendly, positive. I found the physical ambience of the city also very, very nice. In our temporary headquarters here in one of the engineering buildings at the campus of University of Alberta. I've got these huge glass windows where I can see the entire city, the west side of the city, and particularly the river valley. I think it's a really a peril to have a river in the middle of the city and so nicely preserved in its natural shape. I find all of this as tremendous qualities of the city. And, you know, I'm mountain lovers, so the fact that if you really want to, you can spend every weekend in the mountains, that's very attractive too. And I'm not too bothered with the cold winters. I think that's Canadian thing, and we simply have to live with it and love it.
Yeah, right now we're looking out at a snowstorm.
That's true. But as I said, to me, it's one of the beauties of Canada that we do have four seasons rather than one or two. And I find beauty in every season in nature. And so I don't think that should distract anybody who would want to come here from doing a good job and loving the place.
Having been here now, what do you see as possible stumbling blocks that the new Director General might have to deal with? You have a number of different partners, for example.
Yes, but I look at this certainly as a challenge, but I think also as tremendous opportunity. I would look at having this stakeholders, partners, as a very positive opportunity. I think you can look at this as a larger group of supporters of the Institute, and I truly believe that they are. All three institutions, National Research Council, University of Alberta, and Government of Alberta, are very, very keen to succeed with this initiative. They are looking at it in very, very positive mood, and I think we are true partners in this undertaking. So although occasionally you may have to spend a bit more time discussing same things with more people than you would like to, on the other hand, I believe that if you need support, if you need to do something, you will have, again, three partners to go to and find this support.
For someone who's been involved in the research area, do they have to give that up in order to become a director general?
Not necessarily. Quite contrary. I think if we will find a person who is an active researcher and who wishes to continue this part of their activity, I think our structures and our interactions, particularly with the university, would allow arrangements to be made that the person can continue to be an active researcher. It's not easy. I can tell you from my own experience that it's not easy to combine it, but I know people who hold very high level managerial positions in research institutions who still continue to have their own research groups, and usually they do it in a clandestine fashion, you know, visiting the labs late evenings or early mornings. It's tough, it's demanding, but for many scientists, that's just a way of life, and they love doing this. That's their lifeline, if you will, of sanity. So I think it's possible, and it's quite likely that we will find a person who would want to do it, and I do think we will be able to accommodate it.
I was looking through the long list of criteria and qualifications that are on the website job posting, and a couple of things that struck my eye is, one, the person will have to know how to keep a secret, and the other thing is to have a good knowledge of what the NRC Strategy 2006 is. What is that?
Well, we have developed a vision for NRC, which specifically speaks to the role of NRC as national and international leader in innovation, institution that cares highly for its personnel, for its scientists and people in general. Our role in research development, in innovation strategy for Canada, all of this we try to transfer into real deeds within institutes, within the laboratories, and within our interactive system with communities. One of these elements of the vision is cluster developments, and that's exactly what we are trying to do here. We will be positioning ourselves as catalysts of economic and research activity here. So basically, we are trying to align every piece of our activity in all of our institutes. As you know, they stretch from Newfoundland to Victoria. They cover entire Canada. But everywhere where we are, I think we are trying to adhere to this philosophy of these fundamental things that we want to do to work for Canada.
You're not going to be throwing your hat into the ring, but if you were, what would be the one thing you would say to potential candidates to really make them want to come here?
I would think, as I said before, it's a unique opportunity, and it's a unique opportunity that has tremendous chances to succeed. It will succeed. And this opportunity is in the place which is good to live in, which has great people, great environment. I think it would be an adventure of a lifetime for anybody who would be awarded this job.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I was speaking with Dr. Janusz Luszczyk, the Acting Director General for the NRC's National Institute for Nanotechnology. The position is posted on the National Research Council's website, and the closing date for applications is March 1st. The Center for Innovation Studies recently held a workshop in Edmonton to look at the potential for agriculture and forestry to work together. Both industries are looking for greater diversification to survive, and this new market of bioproducts made from cellulose is beginning to garner attention among Alberta's farmers and foresters. If the vision of Neil Oberg and Bill Hunter becomes reality, we could see more pulp and building products made from straw, hemp, or flax. Neil Oberg is a farmer from Forestburg, and he's a co-chair of the Alberta Agriculture Research Institute. He outlined some of the problems facing agriculture today and the need for change.
The base of our development is in the commodity production area. We've gotten very, very good at what we do. We can produce commodities at very low cost and in very large quantities. However, we've maxed out, I guess I'd have to say, in terms of what the marketplace can handle in commodity products. The marketplace tells us these things by lowering the price. And it's becoming very obvious that if farmers want to keep their bottom line in the black, they have to produce something that has, in fact, more financial return to it. What I see as the future is perhaps there's some value adding that we can do to those particular commodity items that we are already growing. Grains, for example, wheat and barley does not always have to go into human food consumption or even cattle food consumption. There's ingredients within those grains that can be very, very valuable in terms of nutraceuticals, human health issues, things like that. And every time we take a bushel of barley or a bushel of wheat and use it for something other than human food, we've accomplished two things. We've reduced the quantity that we have to get rid of in traditional marketplace, and we've opened up a new market for that same barley that's in addition to what we already have.
You're looking at a collaboration with forestry. Why forestry?
Forestry and agriculture are finding themselves in the same situation. Both, again, commodity-based industries. One of the things that we both have in common are significant waste streams of various items that are byproducts, not really waste streams, they're byproducts. These byproducts have the potential to be made into some extremely valuable items that the marketplace can use. One of them, of course, is panel board. We all have heard about straw being made into panel board, but we haven't looked enough at combinations of fibers going into panel board, structural boards, structural timbers, in fact. Huge potential there, and for that to happen, it's going to require agriculture and forestry to put their heads together, put their knowledge together, and then develop a technology that will accomplish the job.
Do you think farmers are prepared to do this? It's a big change.
I think farmers, not just in Alberta, but across North America in particular, are very, very accepting of change. If we look as an example of the adoption of zero tillage, zero tillage was a technology that was adopted in a very, very short time by a large number of farmers. Farmers are a very progressive, forward-looking group, and they've got their eye on the ball, you know, 2, 3, 4, and 5 years down the road. If they can see an opportunity that they can work for, and it's an achievable opportunity, I think the buy-in from the agricultural industry would be extremely high and extremely positive.
Who's going to support this? Because I get the sense from you that this is something that has to happen sooner rather than later. We don't have a lot of time to wait around.
That's exactly right, Cheryl. And one of the things that we've tried to put into place at the Agriculture Research Institute is a much more collaborative approach when it comes to the actual assessment of what it is we spend our money on and what it is we promote. We have review groups that look at the projects that we assess, but the members of those review groups are not just out of agriculture. They are very broad spectrum groups. So what we bring is knowledge from all of those areas, the various disciplines and sectors, looking at the same project and giving their opinions and advice on that project. So what we're accomplishing here is we get a project assessment from lots of different perspectives, but we also get input as to how we can progress from all of those sources as well. And it leads us down a collaborative road that we'll have much more buy-in right from the start, as opposed to trying to find buy-in halfway or three-quarters of the way down the process.
What do you see as being the barriers to this change happening?
Yeah, there's a lot of barriers, and we did discuss them this morning. The ultimate barrier is, of course, are we profitable in what it is we're doing right now? And if not, what has to change? The knowledge base that we have here in Alberta and in Western Canada and in all of North America has been expanding very, very rapidly. What we need, perhaps, for the removal of a barrier is awareness of all of this knowledge, some way of getting that information across to broad spectrum type of a group and facilitate discussion about that so that out of that discussion we can identify some positive directions and priorities that we might want to move towards.
What are the most immediate steps that you're going to take?
Right now, the Agriculture Research Institute and the Forestry Research Institute, and I'd like to add also the Energy Research Institute in Alberta, are going to identify two projects that we're going to put our money in this year before the end of 2004. We want those two projects to be demonstration-type projects that will be based on commercializable outcomes, and they would be examples of what we can accomplish as a collaborative group as opposed to individually.
Any idea what you're looking at?
Yes, two areas. One of them is the fiber and its use. Try to come up with a potential product that we can market, bring to market, and a very innovative and unique, perhaps, blend of fibers for an innovative and unique type of a product. That's one of them. The other one is bioenergy. Plants, trees have energy in them that you don't have to mine or you don't have to drill for. And we need to figure out how we can more effectively and efficiently utilize these forms of energy. So we are very interested in coming up with a project and moving ahead with that project on bioenergy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Neil Oberg, co-chair of the Alberta Agriculture Research Institute. Also addressing the thesis workshop on the future of bioproducts and the collaboration between agriculture and forestry was Bill Hunter. Bill is the president and chief operating officer of Alberta Pacific Forest Industries near Boyle, and he's a founding member of the Alberta Forest Research Institute. Bill believes that with all the competing pressures on forested land and our natural resources, the need for agriculture and forestry to start working together is urgent.
Everything takes time. There's nothing that you pull off the shelf, especially when you're talking about research. Most things take at least 10 years to rationalize and look at what all the potentials are. We have been working with the Alberta Research Council for a couple of years now on the opportunity of hemp and flax pulp, as well as the straw commodities that might be available. So I see that the pressure is coming down on the forestry land base, and the expectations of society are changing so rapidly that there is a huge sense of urgency. So I'd like to get this work done and make the decision once and for all.
You're looking at possibly even changing the name of Alberta Pacific Forest Industries to Alberta Pacific Industries. Why? How does that come about?
Well, I think that we're going to diversify in our future. I hope that would be the intent of our owners, but I think that the new name for our company would be Alberta Cellulose Industries, and because it's all about cellulose when you're talking, especially in our paper markets around the world, and I need to convince the consumers that we can still give them quality fiber for their paper grades that incorporates that degree of, it could be recycled and or the agricultural fiber blend.
You've also started out on setting up tree farms. Where is that cellulose going to go? Because you've said that it might not go into the pulp.
That's true. We had established that with our own ecosystem management practices on our FMA that we would indeed need to look at some ecological benchmarks. So in preparing to put that land aside, we thought we'd have to put in at least 400,000 meters of aspen poplar farms to offset those opportunities, plus clawback from the competition on the land base. But the technology is changing so fast, and some of the research that we've seen come out of the Toronto, Ontario area says that aspen cellulose and lignin can be used in things like, as I showed in the presentation, artificial skin and hard surfacing painted materials and diet supplementaries. And at the end of the day, it's how we generate the revenues for the shareholders and whatever product line we can support that gives them a higher return makes sense to them. And if we can influence science and technology to provide those opportunities, then that's where we want to go. So in 8 years, when the first crop's ready for harvest, it may very well go to something else that generates a higher return.
How do you see forestry and agriculture working together?
Well, obviously, we're living in the same environment where we're talking about soil, dirt, nutrients, water, sunshine, and we're growing things together. So it's only natural that they're a cellulose-based industry as well as us, and we have the same issues. So whether it's barriers in the ability to do research, to get funding, to get public support, or just access the land base that's required for our individual industry says it's a neat way of collaborating and doing it together.
What's holding you back right now? One of the things that you have cited has been government complacency.
Again, government complacency may be overstated, but it was highlighting that we have such a wealthy economy here generated by the energy group that there isn't a political sense of urgency around how this all ties together. We're watching two industries slowly die, in my opinion, both agriculture and forestry. We don't see our children running out and joining forest companies or signing up to buy farms, or we don't even see them going to school in these two fields. So we need to reestablish that maybe from a life sciences perspective, Alberta knows that they have a water conservation problem. They know that there's going to be climate change signals coming down. And agriculture and forestry are the foundation of in dealing with that, in trying to ensure we have a healthy landscape to help mitigate some of those problems that we're anticipating.
How are you going to get this off the ground?
Well, there is no Cellulose Lignin Institute of Alberta. That's a concept for the presentation today, but I think ultimately that's going to happen fairly quickly. I know that the U of A has designs around hiring some fiber research people so that we can do some detailed analysis about what those attributes are of the cellulose that's available in this province. And I only see this being the springboard. You need a vision to demonstrate leadership, so the vision would be the CLIA opportunity. And already the U of A jumped me on the way out of the presentation today saying, we'll build the building. Here we go.
Well, that's one of the things that came out of the discussion today in the thesis workshop is who takes the leadership and where do you get the funding and what's the motivation to really bring this sense of innovation forward. What do you say?
It's a combination. It's private sector, it's the government, it's academia. Again, I tried to highlight in our scrum after the presentations that we need one unique leadership grouping, and I would probably say the life sciences strategy and or alliance is probably the methodology we should use so that we can focus everybody's efforts. You know, funding money is so precious, and if we have any duplication or overlapping, that's a total waste of those valuable dollars. So again, one agency should take the lead from an umbrella point of view, see if we can't create new economies, see if we can't get collaborations between economies and take care of some of those environmental issues that we're looking at in climate change and water.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Well, you're most welcome.
I was speaking with Bill Hunter, President and Chief Operating Officer of Alberta Pacific Forest Industries. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the National Institute for Nanotechnology, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the University of Lethbridge, the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Conservation Association, the Capital Region Innovation Center, Alberta Ingenuity, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Research Council, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.